Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Cereal from the Box.
My name's Gianna.
And I'm Marie.
And on this show, we like to spice up your life with people. On this episode, we have a very, very special guest. We have Abby Rose Morris from the podcast More Than Tracy Turnblad. And she's here to talk to us all about her life, her experience, and being in entertainment. Here we go. Welcome to the show, ma'am.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course.
I have been binge listening to your podcast for the past 3 weeks because I already followed you on TikTok, and then I was like, but she has a podcast also, so I should check it out.
And then I did, indeed.
And it was so good. So do you want to just tell everybody what's your show about, and then we can skedaddle?
So on my podcast, I interview various fat people in the entertainment industry about their experiences with fat phobia, how that shows up for them. And then we also talk about the fat characters that have had a big impact on us, because a big part of my general life philosophy is that media is a teacher, and the ways in which we interact with the world, sometimes come from what we are shown on TV and movies and theater, et cetera. And I think as artists, that's a big power that we have. So I think it's really important to analyze the ones that have impacted us and what has come before. So that's a big part of my podcast as well. And also of my TikToks. If you follow me on TikTok, if you want to, it's at More Than Tracy T. And then we also talk about how can the industry move forward? What can we do to make it a more inclusive space for all body types?
That's awesome. So on your show, you ask a lot of other people these questions, but I want to ask you about you. So tell us about yourself. What was your experience growing up, in a larger body, or just in the entertainment and performing arts, which I'm also a musical theater performer. So I totally get it, but I haven't probably had the same experience as you. So I'd love to hear.
Yeah. So I do want to preface with this by saying I'm super early in my career. I only graduated school in 2019, and a year of that has been pandemic, so I haven't spent that long actually in the professional world, but I've been doing theater since I was a baby child. I started off dancing. My parents are both classical musicians, so I grew up going to see musicals because they would play in pits, operas, ballets, etc. And I had my phase for each of them, had an opera phase, a ballet phase. 7-year-old me was out there listening to Puccini and loving it. And then I eventually I kind of settled on musical theater. And that was right around the time that I got fat. So while I loved musicals as a kid, Wizard of Oz, Sound of Music, all the classics, my experience of doing theater has very much been in tandem with always being in a larger body, or if not actually what is larger, right? Larger than everyone else around me. or visibly different. I haven't always been plus size. I have always been at least chubbier than other people. So I think that in itself is kind of a weird experience when you are treated as so fat in theater and the entertainment world, and then in your real life. I've been a couple different sizes, but I haven't fluctuated that much, but I've been always a smaller fat person and have a lot of privilege because of that. And so, I was never really bullied for being fat, but on stage I have to play characters who get bullied, and it's really weird.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I can kind of relate, because obviously I'm in a smaller body, but in ballet I was bigger than everybody else. So it was weird because I was I'm so big, but then when I go to school, I would be the normal person size. And it was really I don't know, what's the word, Marie? When you're
dysmorphia.
Okay, yeah. I always mix that up with the other one.
Dysphoria.
I let that talk for me.
I was still fatter than everybody in school, but I did, it wasn't as egregious as it was in theater, and people weren't in real life as comfortable. I mean, sometimes they were, but they were not as comfortable being like, you're fat and ugly, as they were in theater, implicitly or explicitly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Theater people are really mean.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't even peers though. It was like, just like the implicit kind of thing.
No,
of like
adults.
Yeah. The adults being like, oh, you're a character actress. Like, you're only going to play older roles until you're 35. Like, you know what I mean? And like being like sneered at when I didn't fit into costumes and stuff like that. It was like all sort of microaggressive. And it also, like, I don't know how much it affected it, but like I didn't really get big parts except for like, you know, the occasional like mom or maid or whatever. So, and that like is through college, like to this day. So like that was also a big thing for me of being like, oh, like I don't know if I'm being overlooked because I'm like this type that's like a supporting character type, or because I'm actually just not as talented. And like that was super, super funky to negotiate as a theater obsessed kid and teen. So, you know, that's like literally something that I'm like still working through. And as is all of it, like, as is all of it, my podcast is just like self-therapy. Sure. It's like group therapy.
That's good. That's good though, to have that space to talk it out. And I'm sure like that really fucks with like your self-concept too.
Oh, for sure.
Like your worth be placed on like how you look, or maybe you're not talented enough.
Or it's like, are you the main character?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that has been huge for me. And then like, there are times where I catch myself living my life and I'm like, I am living a life. Like, the media like says I can't do this. Like, and so it's like kind of jarring to be like having a better life than like you had grown up seeing people who looked like you ever able to have. Does that make sense?
Yes, it definitely does. And speaking of which, like that was one of the things that I know you talk about on your podcast is like the representation.
Yes.
So I was hoping we could talk even a bit more about that. And like, what are the different kinds of tropes that you're seeing in terms of fat folks on TV, in books, and things?
I love this question.
Yeah.
This is my favorite question, because this is my favorite thing to talk about. And it's like, I have like a very, I think, intellectual like fascination with it. So I think the two main tropes I see for fat people, and they are super gendered and really different character to character, are stupid and sad. And it's usually what it boils down to is one of those two things. There's like subsects, I'd say, within both. And of course, this is like just my impressions of stuff, like nothing official. I mean, I could probably write a thesis on it. Hopefully one day I'll get to.
I trust your opinion regardless.
Thank you. But, you know, you see like the sad fat characters, right? So you have both the ones who are like these are the ones who are not supposed to be funny, basically. And usually it's women. Usually it's women who are sad they can't get a man. A lot of times they are also stupid for like ever believing they can get a man. There's usually a weight loss narrative. Great example is like Kate from This Is Us. I find her to be kind of the classic. Martha Dunstock is also a little bit of this. We had a great talk about her on one of my most recent episodes. So check that out if you're listening to this, with the woman who originated her in the West End. And then you have like the funny fat characters. And usually when fat people are being laughed at, it's because they're stupid. And like, the reason for that a lot of the time is like a lot of it goes back to food, of course. Like, no surprise there, you know? Because I think that the prevailing idea, like underneath that, like, haha, fat person eats too much, like, the reason why it's funny is because they're too stupid to realize that's what's making them fat. And so we laugh because they're dumb. So I think
that's so interesting.
That's where I really think that comes from. And I think that the overconfident fat person is also part of that, like Fat Amy or like any like hypersexual, sexually aggressive fat person. And then I don't think you can talk fatness without talking gender, because I just find that they're so intertwined. I had a great episode a while back with a performance artist called Providenza. You might have seen them on TikTok. And they're non-binary and talk a lot about gender and fatness in their videos. And so we had a great conversation about how being fat, like, in some ways ungenders you. And, like, if you're a feminine person, it makes you closer to masculine. If you're a masculine person, it makes you, like, closer to feminine. So I think that's also a really, really interesting piece that I commonly see in a lot of these tropes and is like a super common intersection, as is every possible intersection. But, you know, I think gender is really, really present in a lot of these tropes because that's also a very cheap joke for people to laugh at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like guy in a dress, fat person in a relationship. Like there's something.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting too, how that like gender intersects with fatness, because in terms of like androgyny,
yeah,
in general,
that's what I was just thinking about.
The look like, that we associate with that is not a fat person. It's someone who's like really thin.
Yes, totally.
So that's kind of interesting.
I mean, I think that's like sort of the marketable and fetishized version of androgyny,
mm-hmm.
but I think that's just what we culturally define as androgynous. But I also do think that like when there's a joke about like a fat man being effeminate or a fat woman being masculine, Melissa McCarthy's characters are great examples of this. It's not androgynous. It's like, I mean, I don't even know what the definition of androgyny would be in this case. It's something different, but it is technically, I think it is like a bending of gender norms, you know, like
yeah.
It's in defiance of those norms, because being fat makes you exist outside of what's expected. And yeah.
What would be good representation?
That's
not like tokenized.
That's such a good question. I think that just a world populated by fat people, a few of my guests have also said this, not entirely obviously, but like just seeing more fat people, when I see a fat person in a guest star that has nothing to do with their weight or even a co-star, like I'm like, yes, like I yes, like I'm a real person existing in the world, and like finally that's being acknowledged. It's so rarely acknowledged when the person actually has a name and a story. But I also think there's been amazing media made about like the fat struggle. Dietland is probably my all-time favorite. It's so good. Tragically only one season, but incredible show. You know, Shrill is a great one, like My Mad Fat Diary, and like those acknowledge the pain of being fat while still like positing that fat people are more than just their pain and more than just their fatness. And even if, you know, because like it's not like the you aren't fat, you have fat thing. It's like, no, you are fat and the world sees you as fat and that affects you profoundly, but you're not just that.
I also think Shrek is a great example.
Sorry. I just love Shrek and I will talk about it all day, every day, because it's the best fat representation out there for men especially.
What's your least favorite fat representation show?
Oh, that's a gorgeous question. So hard to choose. Special hate place in my heart for Fat Schmidt in New Girl. Hate that. Fat Monica is the same. I did see New Girl first, so I think that was more like profoundly saddening to me.
I don't know anything about that show. Like, what is?
What is that? So it's like the flashback character used to be fat, then got his life together and got thin. And like when he's fat, he's a completely different person. He's just a trope. He's like just falling and farting and like eating all the time, of course. And like that's all he is. And then he like turns thin and is a completely like different person. And like while like I guess there could be some truth to that, it also is just like super demeaning because it's like, you know, I think a lot of times when people are trying to show fat people as like fatness as like more than just a joke, like they also want to have the joke. And so like it gets weird. My other least favorite is Fat Amy and everything Rebel Wilson's ever done, if I'm being honest.
I can see how Fat Amy would be like the worst of the worst.
For me, it personally is. I don't know how other people feel, but I just feel like super uncomfortable with that like hypersexual thing, and it's tropes like that that make me like never want to put myself out there in that way, you know, like
right.
Those are the things that are like cautionary tales.
But like what do you think people are thinking when they create stuff like that? Like what was the point?
I guess that's what I think, like lol. And I think a lot of the times there's like something about it where people are like, oh, we never show fat people doing this, so let's show them doing this. Like we never show fat people being sexual, so let's show them being hypersexual, but it's for the laugh. So like I wonder if sometimes the intentions are good, but also I don't know, I'm not a writer, I'm not in these writers' rooms. But I also think we're just all sort of steeped in this culture, and no one can be personally held responsible unless they, you know, absolutely refuse to like challenge what they have grown up into. So I do just think that like we've all, it's just sort of a vicious circle, like chain of anti-fat, just it's like, it's, oh gosh. I remember Sonya Renee Taylor talking about this and saying like racism is the water we swim in, and that's, it's that way with fat phobia too. Like we just grow up with it unquestioningly.
When did you feel like you kind of realized like, okay, like I don't want to be trying to fit into a mold anymore. Like I'm just going to be myself and like start being like anti-fat phobia, like loud and proud.
I would say when I wrote my solo show, because I think as much as I had read about stuff before that and like reading about like the words of fat activists on the internet, Shrill by Lindy West was a really big one for me. Reading about intuitive eating and weight science stuff also was really, really huge for me. Because I remember saying, if I'm ever going to accept that I'm going to be fat, like if I'm ever to truly accept myself and my body, I have to like stop trying to change it. So I read the Fuck It Diet. That was really big. But doing my solo show like forced me to actually talk to people about it. And I was terrified to at first. And I kept putting it off. And I kept putting off this podcast because I was so scared of what people would think of me being like an advocate for it, because so many people hate fat people so much. And like, I also, I think there's a part of me that's like, oh, I don't want to give up my small fat acceptable privilege of like having like healthy blood work and like, you know what I mean? Which is so icky. And like, but that's
your
the
blood
truth.
Blood work is better than mine then.
I mean,
I just eat so many muffins and ice cream and they're like, your cholesterol is bad. And
like, I don't fully know. So. It's been a while, but you know, I'm not like I've always been that fat person, or I was for a long time, who would trot out like, oh, I don't eat this and this, and like I exercise like this, and like I do this, and like I'm still fat, so fuck you.
like proving that you're a healthy individual, so therefore like,
yeah,
it's all good.
I'm like, I see so many people like doing things that are not healthy. Like I don't really care about being healthy. I'm sorry, that sounds weird. Like, of course I want to live long and like I want to do what makes me feel good, but like I no longer am super invested in having the label of healthy. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it comes back. But yeah, doing my solo show, I had gone to this audition where it was for the play or musical, Do Black Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? And there's a character in it who is bullied for being fat in the first act. And then the second act, she like wants to be a nun, but like the guy wants her. And she's all grown up, and it says she's like gotten beautiful. So of course they always put a thin actress in a fat suit. But I was like, I'm going to fucking kill this. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to be the first fat person. I was like, this is 2018 or like whatever year it was. I think it was 2018. And I went in there and, you know, my audition went good. They were like, stay. And I was like, oh, lit, I got a call back. And then there were three other girls there. They were all skinny and like conventionally pretty. And they all also were asked to stay. It was a really small audition. And they were singing the song. And I only had this one side where it was like the girl talking to the old nun. And when I got it, I said to the reader, because it didn't say a name on the side, I said, you want me to read for Becky, right? Because I knew there had not been a fat Becky before that I knew of. And the reader was like, yeah, I assume so. I mean, you're like fucking 20. So or I was 21 or whatever. I was like, great, I'm gonna read for Becky, this is awesome. But then I hear these other girls like going in and singing with the guys, and I literally hear them through the wall singing her song, which is Does God Love Little Fat Girls Too, like aka my entire life experience, and like such a heart-wrenching song. And like all these skinny girls are singing it through the door, and I'm like, what's going on? And then finally they come out and they're like, oh, Abby, come in here, you're gonna be reading with all three of them. And I was like, excuse me, no one told me that I was reading for the other character, which was an old nun. And they were like, oh, sorry, do you need a minute? And I was like, nope, let's just fucking do this. And so I had to read for an old nun. I was their reader.
Not my book.
Wow. Yeah, they kept me to use me as a reader for a fat character. So I was pissed, as one would
have been. As you should be.
And, you know, I had really swallowed all the shit that I had been thrown as a fat actor before that, and like sort of rolled my eyes on it and made a lot of jokes about only playing Tracy Turnblad till I'm 40, and like sort of internalized that I guess it was my fault, but that was like the last straw. I was like, fuck this. And I remember that night I was waiting for my train home and it was taking forever to come, and I just called my friend and I was like, I'm doing a one-woman show about this, fuck this. Because I'd sort of thought of like doing some kind of cabaret or solo thing. Then I did a solo show about it, and then I had to come out as fat, and it was scary.
What's it like to come out as fat? Like, what does that mean?
I mean, it's like, it's basically just using the word fat to refer to yourself. And when people freak out, you have to tell them, like, it's okay. Like, I don't think of this word, you know. And in my show, I really did it. I was like, the first thing I said was like, hey, I'm fat. And for tonight, can we just please take fat as only meaning what it means, which is just like the physical fact of like body size, and having the definition in the dictionary is having a lot of excess flesh. So it's like, just take it as that, like plain and simple. That's the definition. It doesn't mean ugly, unhealthy, lazy, sloppy, disgusting, like any of those things. And that's such a hard concept for people to get. But I think when you explain it like that, I hope that it becomes a little easier to understand.
Definitely. And you were kind of, I guess, like, this in a way was one way that you've kind of coped with everything that you've kind of been through in your time in theater. Do you have any like recommendations for how other, if like other people are in a similar situation, what you've been kind of deal with that in a way that's most empowering to them? Most
totally. I would say talk about it, because if we don't talk about it, no one will get it. And if you're fat, challenge your friends who aren't to examine their attitudes toward their own bodies and whether they would apply those to you. Because a lot of times they say, oh, like, it's okay that you're fat, but it's not okay for me to get fat. And then, of course, if you're not fat, challenge that. I would say, learn how to advocate for yourself in situations where, you know, in an educational setting, you're not being given material that's your own age. In a costume setting, you're being treated poorly or asked to buy your own clothes. Like, learn to advocate for yourself in a nice way, which I haven't even gotten a chance to put to the test yet, because that didn't occur to me until I got tips from other fat actors on my podcast. And, you know, it's been obviously quarantine. And then the final thing I would say is, don't be responsible for limiting yourself, which is the hardest fucking thing for me. And, you know, but the way that I think of it is like, challenge them to see you as this, and try to like, think of it as an act of rebellion. So like, if I'm going to go in and sing, like if I were a bell or something, like I'm like, no, that's an act of rebellion. And that's like me challenging the system in a way that like is not going to get me blacklisted or in trouble probably. And if it does, that's stupid. So
honestly.
And then of course, like make your own work too, if that's something that you do. I mean, I did a cabaret about it. It was very much nonfiction, but you know, writing yourself into roles that are true to your experience or true to experiences that fat people are not shown having in media is a wonderful way to combat these stereotypes. And just get famous, and then don't do like falling on your ass fat shit.
a good end goal. And I love also just like creating space for yourself to be authentic.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
That's a summation of some of what I heard, and I feel like that's
totally
an empowering way to kind of go about that, especially when systems like these feel so incredibly oppressive and like there's nothing that you can do about it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like oppressive. It feels like the way things are. It feels like the facts of the world, and that's so hard for me. because I would like to think of myself as a person who's grounded in reality, but I'm actually not, because like, I don't know what's real and what's just been taught to me by the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
I feel like when auditions start again and like things start to like really come back, do you think you'll like approach like casting notices and like open calls differently? Because I know on your show, like you talk a lot with various guests, especially like LA people, mm-hmm. on like what the casting notices say. So like,
yeah,
can you kind of talk about that and like what you're going to do differently now that you have been enlightened and like are ready to?
So, I mean, I would like to think I was doing it a little differently. I like slide in and out. But there was definitely a time where I would see casting notice and I'd be like, no, it says she falls in love. No, it says they're looking for people who can dance. No, it says like, this is a golden age musical. Like nobody wants me for this. So like, I try to think about it in terms of like, oh, what do I want to do? Where do I think it would be cool to see a fat person? I'm trying to think of like any like legit shows I've like been in for, like, but there's this part of my brain that's like, there's no point. So like, I have to like be fighting that or it'll take me over. Yeah, so I think that post my cabaret was sort of when I started approaching that a bit differently and like going to an audition for like Guys and Dolls or whatever and being like, you know what, I could be the first fat hotbox girl, who gives a shit, like that would be awesome, I would love to do that, I'd be great at that, like just like all the things that you may have not let yourself want, you have to like, I think before you can apply it to yourself, you have to like, at least for me and for my personality type, like be comfortable with it on principle and like be familiar with these concepts and be willing to like see it yourself in order for you to believe that other people would want to see it. So I'd say that's actually the biggest difference, is that like now I think before I wasn't sure what everyone else wanted to see, but I think now there's like so many more people that I've met who are on the same page and like who, and even I think that a lot of people on the casting side have become a little more outspoken about this and you know, more established actors as well. And so like, I don't feel like I'm shouting into the void anymore. I feel like if I were to go in with a legit song, people would be less likely to be like, okay.
Definitely. And I feel like in all kind of places, people are kind of fighting back against that. Like even in like big dance companies and stuff, people are like, oh, we don't want to see like sickly people anymore. We want to see like women,
yeah,
you know? And even though it's they're still a very, very far way away in terms of like being fat accepting in like dance companies and like Broadway shows, like in chorus parts and stuff, like, but I think it's hopefully at least a good trend in the right direction.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, we don't want to see.
I didn't know there were fat dancers until, and I mean, I was taking dance classes being like, what is the point? Why am I making myself do this? Like, I'm never, you know, I'm like, this is for Tracy Turnblad. But then like I got to college and there's a really big dance program at UArts, which is where I went. And I met some fat dancers and I was like, what? That like blew my brains out. Which is so silly, because like this is a thing that happens and can happen, and like we have such like narrow and strict and black and white,
yeah,
beliefs about who can be what,
especially in like the commercial world. There's like a lot more opportunities.
Totally. Yeah,
I feel, just because that is what most people watch and where most people want to be seen, versus like theater is like old white people.
Definitely.
Want to stay doing the same over and over. So, I mean, that's, I didn't know that UArts was like really big with dance, which is good for anybody out
there. Oh, the musical theater program, not so much. We had like some of the same teachers, but mm-hmm. the dance program itself is really big and is like one of the top ranked in whatever. I don't know the exact numbers.
Cool. You were like saying earlier that you like discovered intuitive eating and like all that stuff, which is yay. Me and Marie love intuitive eating. How do you feel like your life has changed since like you started embracing the intuitive eating lifestyle?
That's such an interesting question. So, I mean, my relationship with food was never great. great. I mean, I went on my first diet when I was like 10, which was my mom like encouraging me to cut out sugar and white foods, as she called them. And, you know, my mom's a pretty like holistic, naturopathic person. So she was not like go on Weight Watchers, like do Slim Fast or anything. She was like, those are full of chemicals, like natural only. Like she was like very anti-processed food. So that's like sort of what I grew up with. Then I found myself doing some really extreme and probably disordered diets, like more to the point of like disordered eating when I was like a tween and teen. And I think a lot of that came out of theater and like feeling like I wasn't good enough. And my fat body was like just another liability. And like, you know, the only way for me to succeed would be to get thin. And like the only way that I could feel like I was capable of something would be to get thin, because I felt like so helpless and powerless at this like only thing I loved. And like, you know what I mean? Like I just felt like I had this very like slavey relationship with theater where I was like a slave to it and like would like bend over backwards and do anything for it. So I was like, well, I must control something, and that something shall be my food. And it wasn't, I never even weighed myself. It wasn't about like weight or like, it was just like, I need to be thin, but also like, I need to prove that I can do that, can do something. And like every diet I went on was that, every extreme one. My last one was I did Whole30 to prove that I could do it, because all my friends were doing it. And I was like, I can do this, and I have to prove to myself that I can do this. And then when I finish it, I was afraid of certain foods. I would still eat them after a few months, then I'd feel horrible and super guilty. And yep. So I was afraid of food for like 6 months after that. After like previously I had like gone through a pretty good relationship with food phase. So then I was like, wow, that sucks. And I read the book, The Fuck It Diet. That was actually, I heard about because it was written by my, acting teacher's best friend, at the time.
That's so funny. No way.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I've been a vegetarian for 11 years, and after reading that book, I was like, okay, I should probably examine why I'm a vegetarian, except when I did keto, I was not a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I was pescatarian. Like, I was pretty flexible, but I'd always felt like I have to have something that I can't eat. Like, I have to have that, like, thing proving that I'm good. I became a vegetarian so that I could tell people I was a vegetarian. That was why. And like, I still am not like I don't really buy meat as a grocery. Like I live with my boyfriend and he does. So like, I'll eat it when someone else wants to buy it or cook it, but I really only need to eat fish ever. Yeah.
My boyfriend like loves meat, and I just like, I don't want to buy it, but he's like, eats only kosher at his house. So he's like, I just want to eat meat. I want to eat pork. Like he never ate pork growing up because he lived in Israel. Like, they don't have it.
Oh, that's crazy.
I want
meats
now. And I'm like, I don't want to pay for this.
I also grew up without pork, but my dad would eat it, but my mom like doesn't like it and is like weird about it, even though we were so far from kosher. I am Jewish. But yeah, that was also a thing. That's a thing that I still like have trouble eating. Like pork.
Okay.
Meat is fine.
I feel like it's not that good.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. I have these weird boundaries. I have started eating like sometimes like prosciutto in things, or like cured meats, like pepperoni or like pastrami or whatever. I guess that's maybe beef. I don't even fucking know. But, like a pork chop. I've eaten ribs now, which is new. But anyway, yeah, I just realized I became a vegetarian because I wanted to tell people that that was. So I had to let go of this like part of my identity of being a person with self-restraint, this like part of my sort of self-concept and self-mythology, and this thing that like made me feel good about myself and was one of the only crutches I had that made me feel good about myself. And sometimes I'm still like, damn, I was vegetarian for 11 years. That's a long time. And like still feel good about myself for that reason. It was never for environmental reasons. It was never for ethical reasons. It was so that I could look better to other people. And so that I could say I was doing a diet without having to give up any of the foods I really liked. And yeah, so I then stopped dieting. It was terrifying to stop being a vegetarian. That was the biggest thing. And I still really struggle in some ways because I think I have a really big scarcity mindset around food, which also goes back to the ways fat people are taught to interact with the world and the ways that artists are taught to interact with the world, especially actors, and all people who audition, performers. So something that's been really hard for me as I've like tried to embrace intuitive eating is like there's allowing all foods, yes, and that I think I've been mostly able to do. And I have really found that when I allow a food and I eat enough of it that I get sick of it, it loses its power over me.
Yeah.
And I've checked most foods off my list of that at this point. And during the pandemic, I actually stopped like Cheetos, Doritos, and Cheez-Its stopped having power over me. It's a miracle.
Yes, I was like,
they put shit in those, that makes them addictive. But I'm pretty sure I was just like scared to eat too much of them because my mom was so against like orange dye and artificial flavoring. So they were contraband in my house. Anyway, but yeah, the hardest part has been being broke. And like, I am still in a broke mindset even when I'm not broke. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, I must stretch my dollar and like, I can't throw anything out. And this pandemic was also kind of weird because I was living with my boyfriend's family for a lot of it. And so like, they were like, tell us what you want for groceries. And I was like, I don't know. And, you know, then they would like make these dinners and I'd be like, guess I'm eating what you're having. And like, and there was like, you know, I just like didn't have like, I felt like I didn't have autonomy over like the food that I got to eat, which I think if I was had a healthier relationship with food, then I wouldn't need to have that so bad. But anyway, like I have just really felt since even in college, because I just didn't have much spending money. You know, my tuition was paid and I was like, I had secure housing and everything, but like, I just felt like I was always spending too much and running out and having a low bank balance. And like, even though I'm obviously not necessarily, obviously I am from a middle class, like fairly privileged background, like, and we always had enough to eat. And my mom really invests her money in fancy food more so than fancy anything else. Like, I didn't buy a new item of clothing till I was like 12 and had a babysitting job. Like, but we always like bought like healthier food. Like we didn't eat fast food, like, and we never skimped on that. So, it's hard for me to skimp on food. And, that's just like the biggest challenge still to this day that I like feel compelled to never waste anything. And like eat the leftovers, even if the leftovers are gross. And like, I feel like I've failed if a food goes bad in my fridge. Like, I just threw out so much food right before this. And, cause I'd been out of town and it went bad in the fridge. And like, I still feel so guilty. And like, I don't want to waste any money by wasting food.
Yeah, you're definitely not alone in that.
For sure. That's the hardest thing. Yeah. And I do feel like in some ways and some places I'm like able to, you know, I don't know if that I was ever like a big binger, but like, I don't know how much this is progress versus just me noticing it, but like, I don't have to eat a whole container of ice cream or like, but then sometimes I do feel like I have to stuff myself because if the food is free, like, if, you know, like at a buffet or something, I'm like, well, I better eat all of this. And it's like, I'm more aware of it now. And so I'm trying to like, be like more is coming. Having not paid rent for most of the pandemic really helped because I was able to save. And now I don't feel like I'm going to be like broke on the street and never eat food again anymore. But like, it's so weird because it's like the same feeling as, you know, this is my last Cheeto and then tomorrow I'm never eating Cheetos again. Like, it is still that feeling.
Yeah.
Because even if it's, I don't know when I'll get Cheetos again, I don't know, or whatever food, like, I don't know when I'll have the ability to eat as much as I want and as much as I need of whatever I want. That's like, it's just such a similar feeling. It's been really weird. And I think it's made me eat, like, overeat more than I ever have in my life, pretty much. Or at least it's, like, a different kind of, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And honestly, I think awareness is progress. I wouldn't put yourself short on that, because I think noticing the patterns, noticing where they're coming from and what's like the root of things, and like where else like the scarcity mindset shows up in your life, I think
it's sure.
all
the answer is simply everywhere. It's all so interconnected. It really is.
Definitely. Yeah. And with like the money aspect of it, I think that's something that we don't talk about enough in terms of how that like impacts our relationship
yeah.
with food.
People do talk about it with food insecurity, but I think that there's definitely like a sort of sliding scale of it, because I've never truly been food insecure, but have very much been like had this like hyper frugal, like I don't know.
I think
insert your stereotype here.
I like live by myself. Like I worked through college. Like my parents, like luckily they like paid for my school to go there, but mm-hmm. I like paid for my life after that. So that's something I'm always thinking about. It's like, oh, I have to work more hours. Like, what if I don't have like, and like, I'm going to be doing this like training thing next year where I won't be able to work as much. So like, I'm like scrambling right now. I'm like, I have to buy, like, I can't be buying so much food every week. Like, what am I doing? Like just buying popcorn, like hoarding popcorn. And I'm like, you have to stop.
Like if there was ever free food anywhere, I was smuggling that shit out. Like,
no, I would.
I would smuggle whole loaves of bread out of the cafeteria and like bagels at my college. And like, I would get my friend to use a guest swipe on me, cause I thought the food there was disgusting, but like, who was I to turn my nose a bit free food, you know? And then I would like take this bread back and like put it in my freezer for a rainy day. Yeah, not, you know, and
you're doing great. You're doing great.
Thank you. I'm doing my fucking best. I feel like better. I feel like I'm in a place where I'm like able to work on it now, more so than I have been since a long time.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that independence is really important for it, unfortunately. You know?
Yeah, definitely. I do want to, like, switch gears just a little bit, because I know you have quite a following on TikTok, so now I feel like I can talk about TikTok things and you might know what I'm
saying. Okay, go wild.
But I don't know if you've seen, there's, like, one or two creators on TikTok that does this, but they talk about, like, particularly in the early 2000s, the media calling different celebrities and fat, even though they weren't.
Yes.
And then I was thinking about that, because when I went and listened to some of your podcast episodes and scrolled all the way back to the intro, used the term entertainment fat.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting. So I was wondering if we could have a bit of a conversation and maybe can
totally
whoever's listening about what you
entertain. It's exactly what I was talking about, like the first thing I said. Like when you're considered fat by the entertainment industry, but in your life you are not considered fat by the world. And sometimes people in the world have entertainment standards. It is true. But, you know, generally it's like, I think being entertainment fat has, the definition has widened, you know what I mean? Like, it was probably, I don't know if you guys bleep out size numbers, but, you know, once it was being over a size 2, now it's being over a size 6 or 8. Like, it's wide, it's, like, gotten bigger, what's considered entertainment fat versus entertainment normal, I guess, I think. Because I just see more people with different, like, not different, slightly larger bodies that are still very much thin and straight size.
Right.
Because if you look at, like, Sex and the City and Sarah Jessica Parker in that show, rail fucking thin, all of them were. Mm-hmm. We don't see that on TV as much anymore. It's, like, very much a little bit more curvy, a little bit more often still thin, but like not quite so thin.
I feel like they're like, do we want people to look like they're on the brink of death? Possibly no. Like, let's not kill our celebrities yet.
Yeah. And I think that's been hopefully a good side effect of widening the thing. But then of course, like, you have other stuff combating it, like, you know, plastic surgery and Kim Kardashian bodies and like people wanting the right careers in the right places and wanting to be fit and look, quote, look healthy, end quote. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's morphed and changed, but it hasn't gone away. But yeah, I guess I've certainly always been entertainment fat and probably regular small fat or midsize, but, yeah,
we were arguing about midsize, me and Marie, the other day.
How do you feel about the term midsize? Because I've seen a lot of discourse on TikTok.
Oh yes, very much discourse. I think I have talked about it on my podcast a little bit before, but basically the gist of midsize for me is like, I think it would be a useful term if we could agree on what it meant. But the trouble with it is that in my view, is that a lot of girls who are like, if mid-size is technically between straight and plus size and not just like, where's a medium? I think that could be a useful term because like there is an experience of that, like the small fat experience that is kind of unique and like is very much like a, oh, they don't, like everything in the plus size store is too big. Everything in the straight sizes is too small. Like, mm-hmm. or you get to shop in both, which is the best of both worlds. Honestly, you know, for all the stuff that's like so annoying about being any bit larger than what's like entertainment ideal, like being a size 12, 14 is kind of exciting as someone who has been both of those sizes and like, mm-hmm. Cause you do get twice the options in some cases, but also you get -2 the options in some cases. So
yeah.
Anyway, but I think midsize would be a useful term if we could decide that it meant that collectively and not have people who are, right. who feel like they've been, who've experienced fat phobia directed towards them while still being straight size or thin. Mm-hmm. Cause that's a tricky thing. And that to me is more entertainment fat territory. I would say entertainment fat to me is smaller than midsize because you don't have to be a size 10, 12 to be considered fat in entertainment. And you certainly didn't 10 or 20 years ago.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is kind of like what the basis of the conversation Gian and I were having over midsize was because I was trying to say that based on the information that I've taken in on TikTok, that midsize tends to mean the being in between the straight and the plus size, or being on the border of both. But then the way that it's used more collectively is by people that are like a size 8. And then even when we base things based off of size.
Right. It's tricky because people look so different.
Great indicator. Right. Exactly.
I see a lot of these girls who are like mid-size queen. Like I wear this size and it's like my size or a size small. And I'm like, I don't look like that. Like,
yeah, it's just
like, there's like that sort of acceptable like weight distribution thing too.
Mm-hmm, like definitely. Some people I feel like use the term and I'm like, I don't want to start a fight with someone if this is making them feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
Like, they technically aren't correct, but it was like, do we say something? Do we leave it alone?
Yeah.
Like,
and I think that the tricky part is too, sorry, continue.
No, it's because people like Marie and I like want to be like allies. Like we're like, we want to support, be like, you know, speaking on behalf of people, but it's like, I don't know. I don't want to make someone feel bad for themselves either if they're like using a term and feeling good about themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, but I do also think that the reason midsize makes a lot of people feel good is because they feel like, oh, I'm not fat, I'm just midsize. Like, I'm this category. Mm-hmm. That's a new kind of acceptable.
Which is, like, not fat. Fat. That's Marie's point.
Yeah. And that's because the word fat still has so much power for so many people. So I feel like that's probably what stops a lot of people from calling themselves like small fat or a little bit fat or like whatever. Yeah. But I do also think that I hear colloquially from a lot of people who consider themselves mid-sized that they've been told they're not fat enough to be fat or to be in the fat liberation community. Mm-hmm. Which I am also like, come on, we like all need to be in this community. Like we all need to be supporting each other and working on it collectively. It's just you can't take up all of the space in a movement that is supposed to help people who are so much more oppressed than you, you know?
Definitely. And I feel like that's what it always comes back to. I saw like another great TikTok that kind of broke it down into three different sections and I can't fully remember, but I think it was kind of basically like one circle was like personal experiences that you have. One was ideological, so that'd be like the thin ideal, diet culture, things like that. Yeah. And then one was like a systemic structural institutional category.
Yes.
So when we're talking about fat phobia, we're talking about a collective of all
totally. Things.
And so someone that is in maybe an entertainment fat body or not right. quite mid-size or in this size 8 mid-size kind of world might be experiencing those personal things. But if they're not experiencing these other forms of oppression, then, you know, we need to be working collectively
yeah.
with the fat liberation movement in order to be able to work on changing the structural things and the ideological
yeah.
things that are governing our society and impacting everybody, but most importantly, fat people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that so much of it is just saying, like, even if you feel bad and you've been told, like, even if you've had these bad experiences and you have trauma, like, that you have to look at the facts and, like, you have to be able to make space for the fact that you are not, like, the most oppressed. It's not a competition, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, guys, this has been enlightening, 100%. Thank you, Abby, for being on our show.
Thank you for letting me talk at you for an hour.
No, we love it. I'm very much a listener, and like I'm very much a listener, so I love hearing you speak, and it's so exciting to see you over the Zoom and meet you. And yeah, so everybody should go check out Abby's podcast. And Abby, if you have anything else you want to plug, please, this is the time.
I would say just follow it on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok. It's at More Than Tracy T. And then if you want to follow me, I'm Abby Rose Morris, and I'm always looking for pals. And if you want to share your story, I'm hoping to get that started on the podcast. I'm about to go on a season hiatus, during which I will have to raise money for the next season. So stay tuned for information about that, and you can find it on all socials coming soon.
Yay.
So exciting. Thank you, Abby.
Thank you, guys.
You can follow our podcast at Cereal From The Box on Instagram, or find us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have a question that you need answered, you can email us, cerealfromthebox@gmail.com. And if you want unrelated contact, you can follow me at Gianna Bartolini on Instagram. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
Bye.